Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloen. California is a land of paradoxes, a state that is one of the leading agricultural producers in the world, home to millions of people, and a land of vast natural beauty. And most of that beauty and productivity is dependent on water. Drought and deluge have been part of the California story since its earliest days, and divisive water issues have been a hallmark of its history. In this program, we're going to profile River Partners, a conservation organization that has worked to build relationships between the many diverse stakeholders with water interests instead of the proverbial water wars we hear about in many media accounts. River Partners' mission is to bring California rivers back to life through restoration projects that enhance the quality of life for both the wildlife and people who depend upon clean sources of water. Later on in the show, we'll talk to restoration scientists Michael Rogner and Mike Davis about some of River Partners' signature projects, including one about to become California's newest state park, Dos Rios Ranch Preserve, at the confluence of the San Joaquin and Tuolumne Rivers, as well as the science behind their restoration efforts. But first, let's learn more about River Partners' history and their work from the woman at the helm of the organization, President Julie Rentner. Her passion is to help restore some of the vast habitat that's been lost in the Golden State through cooperative efforts between agriculture and environmental science. She joins us now. Julie Rentner, welcome to Blue Dot.
Oh, thanks for having me.
First of all, congratulations. I saw just today a really wonderful article came out in the LA Times by Ian James about your work around Merced. So that was very cool. Congratulations on that.
Oh, thanks. We're really excited to be sharing the story about how river restoration can be helpful for climate resilience all over the state, droughts and floods.
Yeah. Well, let's back up a bit and talk about River Partners, because it's not a conservation organization that everybody knows about. So tell us about the origins of River Partners.
Absolutely. So River Partners was actually formed in the late 1990s, based out of Chico in the Sacramento Valley. And what was interesting and different about this environmental organization is that it's founded by farmers and dedicated to installing projects. So our environmental community can be full of advocacy, sometimes even legal challenges to try to get behavior change for, you know, improving ecosystem function and environmental quality. And River Partners founders back then in the late 1990s took this stance of saying, if we're really going to fix this really big problem, which is that in California, we've lost 98% of our native riverside forests and wetlands. If we're really going to address this problem at scale, we need to focus on getting the work done and getting it done with tools and techniques that are familiar to Central Valley communities, namely farming. So River Partners was founded by a couple farmers, and their entire approach was to use farming practices to bring the river back to life.
Yeah, it's amazing you mentioned that the loss of that habitat, because I remember when I was a kid in Paradise, California, I'd spend my summers there, and visiting some places along the Sacramento River that were old Spanish land grants, and they were just like primordial, jungly, incredible places with all kinds of wildlife. And so much of that has disappeared just in my lifetime.
It's true. And really, since California became a state, you know, since the gold rush, we had policies and practices in place to drain off all of the, quote, swamp and overflow lands. Because at that time, those were wastelands. Those were areas that weren't productive for people. We know now how productive those swamp and overflow areas are for not only wildlife, native vegetation, but also for, you know, the functions of our watershed. So by draining off the swamps of the Central Valley to make way for this incredible agricultural economy that we have in California today, breadbasket of the world, we wound up cutting off our rivers and our watersheds from the important function of attenuating flood flows and groundwater recharge, which is just so critically important today.
Tell me a little bit about your background. How did you come into this work and to become president of this organization?
Absolutely. I had the honor and the privilege of growing up in the shadow of Mount Diablo in eastern Contra Costa County, and went and studied natural resources at UC Berkeley, which is, you know, the state's first land grant university. And I learned through my studies there from, you know, the very people who were around when we were in the dam building era and we were setting up forests all over the watersheds of California. I learned from those people about natural resources management in California. So when I was done with school, my husband wanted to go study at UC Merced, the brand new University of California Merced campus. I won't tell you the difference in tuition between when I was in college and when he went to college, but it was traumatic. But anyways, my husband wanted to go study at UC Merced to be an engineer, and I didn't know much about the Central Valley. Moved to the Central Valley and was shocked. You know, I was shocked that in all of that education about our forests and our natural resources, I hadn't heard much about the millions of acres of forest that we once had in the bottom of the Central Valley that have all been cleared and leveled and drained. And I didn't learn much in my education about, you know, how much of our wetlands we had lost in California. I was enamored with the sophistication of the agricultural economy of the valley. It's just a marvel to behold, you know. And when I, you know, went looking for a job with my degree in forestry, I found this group, River Partners, who is doing agricultural work to reforest the lost riverside forests of the valley. So I fell in love immediately. I spent most of my time in the early years with River Partners as a project manager and a scientist, designing and permitting restoration projects and monitoring their performance. I quickly learned that we needed to make a much larger footprint than we had, you know, up until that time. And so I got into grant writing. So River Partners is also a kind of unique environmental organization in that we are largely funded, 95% of our work, from grants that we compete for. We compete across the state or across the nation for public grants. Not a lot of philanthropy, not a lot of other sources of revenue. So in my impact and contribution to River Partners, I spent a lot of time writing grant proposals and securing funds to acquire lands and to install restoration projects. Then over time, one of the co-founders announced to our board that he wanted to retire. So the board asked me, could we do a facilitated leadership transition? And so in the year 2019, spent the year with John Carlin, one of the co-founders of River Partners, transitioning leadership of the organization. So I really grew up through the ranks of River Partners, from managing projects on the ground to getting to see how the finances and the administration of the business work, to now, you know, leading this fast growing team of passionate people who are making a really big difference. Our impact as of today is over 18,000 acres of reforested floodplains in the Central Valley.
Yeah, and what I appreciate about your philosophy and your work is that it counters this narrative you tend to see in the media of it's kind of this us versus them, you know, the agriculture versus nature narrative, whereas River Partners views it as, you know, if we just stand with our neighbor who's a farmer, you know, and talk about what we value the same things, you know, like John F. Kennedy said in a famous speech he made, but we all value, you know, we all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And could you talk a bit about that philosophy of working together in partnership rather than against each other?
Yeah, it's fundamental to recovering our ecosystems. And I think it's fundamental around the world to recovering our ecosystems is that, you know, people are a part of the natural environment. And if we believe that we're going to restore or we're to stem the crisis of biodiversity loss by simply locking people out, I don't think that's going to last. I don't think that's a durable solution. So here at River Partners, we think instead about how do we, and this is our mission statement, how do we create wildlife habitat that benefits people and the environment? And that's critical because when you are able to describe in meaningful and measurable ways how an ecosystem restoration project also benefits a community by providing safe access to natural open spaces for recreation and for mental health, or how it attenuates flood risk and gives, you know, nuisance or damaging floodwater a safe place to spread out, suddenly you start to see that those sensational arguments that are out there in the media are just that, you know, that they aren't the arguments that we have on the ground when we're standing shoulder to shoulder trying to address climate change driven disasters or other kinds of stresses that, the weather is bringing to us today. I'm encouraged, honestly, because I see a ton of leadership coming out of the agricultural community and even our irrigation districts or irrigation managers who are internalizing this issue that, you know, we've really transformed the Central Valley and we've lost almost all of its natural function. This is a transformation of a global scale, probably larger than anywhere else on planet Earth. I mean, the magnitude of our water projects here in California is unrivaled. And I'm seeing leadership from agricultural communities and from irrigation managers all over the Central Valley who are saying, it's time for us to play an important role in recovering our lost or nearly lost Chinook salmon populations, recovering our lost habitat, and even finding places to create safe recreational access for Central Valley communities to get down to the river, to enjoy the river, and to enjoy the shade of an oak tree.
Yeah, because in my experience, you know, most of the farmers and people in agriculture I know, they love the outdoors. They love to hunt and fish, and you need, you know, healthy outdoor places that are functioning well to be able to do that.
Yeah. And one of the things that has kind of driven that out of the Central Valley has been a real, you know, strong focus on industrialization of our farming practices. So really turning the farm from something that, you know, generations of farmers manage into something that is a bottom line on a spreadsheet of some absentee, you know, owner or investor somewhere else in the country. When those decisions aren't made locally, sometimes those decisions that are made by those who aren't living here tend to be a little bit more narrow, a little bit more optimized, and a little bit more damaging to the quality of life for the people who live in the valley.
Could you talk a bit about the scale and number of projects that River Partners is involved with in the state?
Oh, yes. I love this question. We've been laser focused on scaling up as much as we possibly can for 25 years now. And we've been able to complete more than 260 restoration projects, not just in the Central Valley, but also a few of those in Southern California, both in San Diego County and in the Imperial Valley. And when you total it all up, it's over 18,800 acres of reforested and reconnected floodplains and riverside forests.
I love that word reconnected, because it's this transition from the old paradigm of, oh, well, we'll just set this little piece of property here aside, this piece of land for a wildlife refuge, instead of what you're talking about, which is reconnecting these, you know, large riparian corridors so that nature can work as it was intended to, and that benefits everybody.
Yeah, it turns out we're still learning a lot about what nature really does here in California and in our large, large watershed, you know, from the peak of Mount Shasta or the peak of Mount Whitney all the way down to the Golden Gate. And what we're learning, especially in the last few years, was that we can detect a shifting pattern, that the rain and the snow that used to fall on California was colder than it is today and than it's projected to be into the future. And so our entire, you know, water resources development history has relied upon California's, you know, precipitation being stored as snow in the Sierras. We're starting to see that shift as more and more warm storms hit the state and it falls as rain. That rain accumulates in the Central Valley and drains through the Delta. And there's actually a really significant risk, loss of life and property in Stockton and other communities in the Delta from increased flooding. The Central Valley Flood Protection Plan actually estimates that the peak flood making its way through Stockton in the next 50 years will be 3 to 5 times larger than the flood of record. It's just hard for our brains to grasp how much water that is moving through a system that was designed a few generations ago with incomplete information. So, you know, working together, working in partnership with excellent, you know, forecasters, meteorologists, and data, big data, right? You think all of that water that falls in our watershed also supports the Silicon Valley. You know, it also supports Los Angeles and Hollywood and Beverly Hills. But the Silicon Valley, we're the, you know, the home of big data. We have a very interesting perspective at this moment of, you know, from satellite imagery, from interesting data interpretation, just what's happening in our watersheds, what it means for the health of our communities and the health of our ecosystems, and thus how we need to be investing in a new kind of nature-based paradigm for water resources development in California.
Yeah, and when you allow nature to do its work, what it has adapted to over, you know, millions of years, millennia of evolution, it acts as this wonderful buffer to those kinds of dramatic, you know, which can be very damaging effects.
That's exactly right. Yeah. California has some, you know, significant extremes, honestly, in precipitation. We'll go, if you look at the tree ring history over thousands of years, you see that we sometimes have mega droughts that might last dozens of years. If you think about what that kind of an effect, if a long duration drought like that would have on our agricultural, municipal, and industrial water users today, it's devastating, right? So by using nature-based solutions that are resilient in the face of these wild variations in how precipitation falls in California, taking advantage of the floodwater and getting it into the ground as fast as possible so that we can have, you know, more storage and more availability through the dry years, this is really the future of water resources development for California.
Another aspect of your work that I appreciate is it's that all hands on deck philosophy of bringing everybody to the table to work together instead of just, you know, litigation and things like that. Can you just talk a bit about that philosophy and how it works with River Partners?
Well, when you start with a problem statement about how 98% of our wetlands and riverside forests have been lost, you realize quickly that that's not a problem that you can solve with a small handful of people or one organization. So River Partners, I mean, it's in our name. Partners is the ethic that will get us through to actually making a difference in that big problem statement. And so we rely upon engagement, participation, deep partnership with businesses and local communities, with workers in local communities, with neighbors and farmers, all the way to engineers and planners, public works directors, all the way up to the leadership of the state of California's Natural Resources Agency and federal leaders in the Department of Interior, all working in alignment towards a positive outcome. You can imagine with that much coordination from the ground all the way up to the federal government, there's a lot of opportunity for malalignment. There's a lot of opportunity for people to think, my value set is more important than that value set, or I don't like the direction that we're going. I don't think it's optimal. And so what we found over the years through all of those projects and all of those acres of restoration is that taking a really transparent approach, being very communicative, almost over communicative about projects and how they're being developed and what we hope to get from them is the key to deep partnership. Ultimately, if we're going to get this job done, we have to live in partnership. And something that's rare in the water world today, Dave, is thinking about the abundance that we have here in California, right? It's really easy to think of our water situation in California as one of scarcity. If I get what I need, you don't get what you need. And instead, when we zoom out a little bit and think about patterns of precipitation over 10 years or sometimes even over 5 years, it's clear we actually have enough water in California. We do. We just have a distribution problem. We don't store enough of it. We don't have it distribution systems in places where we, you know, absolutely need them. So how do we take the rhetoric and the partnership and the relationships out of a place of argument and litigation and into a place of abundance and alignment? Is by working together on the ground, getting projects done.
Yeah, and we look forward to learning more as this program progresses about the work being done by River Partners. So Julie Rentner, president of River Partners, thanks for sharing your perspectives and your passion for this very necessary work. If California is going to thrive in the future, we need to take this kind of approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure to chat with you.
Thanks to our guest, President of River Partners, Julie Rentner. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll look deeper into the science behind River Partners restoration projects and two special places, one of which is going to be California's newest state park. I'm Dave Schloem, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening to Blue Dot. Now let's turn our attention to the science behind River Partners restoration work. Our next River Partners guests are Associate Director of Restoration Science, Michael Rogner, and Senior Restoration Science Ecologist, Mike Davis. Michael and Mike, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having us. It's great to be here.
Well, I'd like to start out with just getting briefly tell us about your background. So let's start with you, Michael. How did you come to be working for River Partners on this kind of work?
Yeah, I've worked in the Central Valley, California for over 20 years now. And I was doing research on how songbirds react to restoration projects. And that led me to River Partners, where I have now been for 17 years.
And Mike, what about you?
So my background is as a fisheries scientist, and I've worked for the better part of a decade all over the American West working on native fishes recovery. I moved to the Central Valley in about 2016 and fairly quickly found my way to River Partners and doing this important restoration work here.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the history of California, because it's fascinating that we're now coming to this realization that we want to restore these riparian systems to what they used to do, to behave as natural systems instead of, you know, what we've done in the past, which is try to just engineer our way out of any kind of flooding issues. Could you talk a bit about like the paradigm shift from what we used to do to what we think we should be doing now? Start with you, Michael.
Yeah, when we first started developing California, you know, when Europeans started developing California, we made a lot of bad decisions, and that, namely in where we were going to build our communities. We built them in places that historically flooded quite a bit. And, you know, now basically 2/3 of the Sacramento watershed, which is the largest watershed in California, 2/3 of those people live in the Sacramento metro area. So it's these are not decisions that we can just go back and change lightly. So the idea of doing habitat restoration and river restoration is really just trying to dial back some of those poor decisions we made as a society in the past and rebuild some of these rivers to function in a little more natural way.
Mike, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just think it has taken us many decades, lifetimes even, to realize, what imposing, our sense of control and engineering on the landscape has wrought. And, you know, for many decades now, we've seen the steady decline and collapse of so many native aquatic and terrestrial species in the Central Valley. And fortunately, there's this collective awareness now that we've lost so much dynamism in our ecology and our landscapes, and importantly in our rivers, and we're all now working to restore some of that dynamism that underpinned so much of what we value in nature.
Let's talk about the process of trying to restore some of these places. What are some of the science keys, from a scientific background, to trying to restore some of these riparian areas?
Yeah, the three processes that are really key to rivers are erosion, sediment transport, and deposition. So essentially, if any child has done this where you pour a bunch of water into the garden and you watch, the soil kind of get washed away, that's happening on a really big scale. And so when we put dams on these big rivers, we're interrupting that. We're disrupting the ability of a river to function like a river. And so now we're trying to go into these, highly altered landscapes and create wildlife habitat and, all of these other goals within this system, which no longer functions the way that it used to. So it presents huge challenges, in the restoration community. It's the constant thing that we're butting our heads up against when we're trying to design these projects.
Yeah, it's really interesting for me, you know, watching the Sacramento River the last couple of weeks, and I've seen this so many times before, especially in winters like this one and last one, where, you know, it goes from this beautiful, clean, green water, where I go fishing quite often and it's gorgeous, to this big, muddy, you know, doing its best impression of the Mississippi River. And it looks all very scary and everything, but the river really needs to do that in order to, you know, like you said, flush out those sediments. And, you know, that's important for the fishery, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, the diversity in conditions that you just, described so well is just a fraction of what used to exist. And that's the way I often think about our rivers in the Central Valley, especially from a fisheries recovery perspective. We often refer to it as, using a technical term of hydrologic alteration, but a better way to think of it, a simpler way might just be in terms of an overall simplification of the river. So what we're trying to return to the landscape is a diversity of conditions across a large swath of the Central Valley, because after all, that's what our native species evolved with and are well adapted to, and it's what they need to recover.
What would the river systems have really looked like? You know, if we could go back in time in a time machine and take a look at the Sacramento, San Joaquin valleys and these big rivers, what would be some of the key things we would notice that are different?
Well, there's some famous drawings from the flood of 1862, which if you're unfamiliar with that, it was a massive flood. Basically, it killed like 1% of the population in California. And there's these drawings from Sacramento where, you know, everybody's in canoes. If you would have been standing in what is one of the now tall buildings in downtown Sacramento, you would have not been able to see the end of the water facing either north or south, you know, just massive lakes, formed in these places where we now have communities. It was a incredibly complex, mosaic of different wetland habitat types, and, you know, with roughly 95% of that has been destroyed over time. And so there are still places where you can see little glimpses behind the curtain of maybe what it once looked like. But for the most part, there is very little remnant habitat left in the valley.
Yeah. And there's this notion that, you know, flooding is bad, but that's not always true. Some flooding is good. And some of the work you're doing is trying to encourage flooding in the places where it's going to do the most benefit. Could you talk a bit about that aspect of your work?
Yeah, exactly. So the river channels, the way that we've constricted them, they can no longer, you know, handle these big flows. And so we need to find places, and luckily there are a lot of them out there, where we can expand on the amount of area that the river is allowed to flood. And so many of our projects involve setting back levees or punching holes in levees to allow water to expand on the floodplain. And this is really just a supply issue. You know, there's way more water than there is space. And do we want that water to end up in our homes, or do we want it to end up in a safe place, you know, out in, you know, a forested area along the river? And those are the decisions that we have to make.
Well, I would argue that if you do it that way, it also benefits the water ending up in your home, because that flooding can really help recharge groundwater and the aquifers in the Sacramento Valley.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ending up in your home by coming in through your front door, you know.
Oh, that's bad. Yes.
That's bad. Yeah. But you bring up a key point about all these ancillary benefits of these projects where groundwater recharge, carbon sequestration, the ability for families to go out and recreate. You know, there's all these reasons besides just flood control or just creating wildlife habitat that these projects are so important.
Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just wanted to say with respect to water supply and water security, you know, I think some of the most exciting collaborations that we're a part of are the product of a realization by a lot of different diverse communities and interests around approaches that utilize nature-based solutions that are likely to not only recover native species in the Sacramento Valley, but are also probably the best way to secure water security for our agricultural communities as well. So there's a collective realization that there are some ways that we can work together to recover native species and secure water supplies for cities and agricultural communities.
Yeah, it's definitely better to go for the win-win than somebody wins and somebody loses paradigm. One of the also interesting things about this is that, you know, when you look at what we've done, which is a lot of times to use riprap and concrete and, you know, forming these barriers to try to control the river, that a lot of times it's really just planting the native plants and trees that does a lot to mitigate the effects of flooding. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, we work a lot with hydraulic engineers to look at ways that you can use vegetation to help steer water, you know, into places where it's safe. So you can use vegetation to back up water, you know, in places where flooding is not a concern. You can use, you know, things like grassland corridors and other things to really move water through an area. So it's incredible what you can do with you know, these sort of green infrastructure. It's quite a bit cheaper than the traditional methods that we use for all of these things. And what you're also, you're also getting by putting in all of those native species, you're just getting much more diverse habitat, which is great for wildlife and people as well.
Then, of course, we went through those, you know, very bad years of drought very recently, a decade at least. And then in 2023 and then this year, we've had really solid wet winters. And I'm just wondering, how has that helped benefit your work on restoration?
Well, I think we kind of forgot, you know, going through, it was what 2007 to 2016. You know, like 8 of those 10 years were severe drought conditions. And we kind of forgot, you know, what an average year looks like, because this year is just marginally above average in terms of precipitation. It's not, you know, a terribly wet year. The difference is that there was a lot of water in the reservoirs to start with, because last year was a wet year. And then the storms this year have been warm. And so a lot of the water that would have fallen as snow is falling, you know, instead of as rain. And so washing down into the valley. So these floods that we're seeing, you know, currently are, you know, it's coming from a totally average year. And, you know, it's just, it's amazing how big these systems are. And I think sometimes we forget, we get a little complacent, and that's one of the things that the drought led to, is just a little bit of complacency on our part.
And I would add to what Michael said is that it's been a very exciting couple years for us as restoration practitioners. I mean, it can be awful difficult to lead planning of restoration projects during a period of drought, and you're trying to get people to imagine what this landscape will look like under floodwaters. And it's an entirely other thing to, you know, be able to take people out to a site to learn from observing the floodwaters, to have key opportunities identified, you know, just by the opportunity of observing the floodwaters. So it's been a great period of time for us to observe our projects and to learn from them.
Another interesting aspect of the work you're doing, along with people like Carson Jeffries from the UC Davis Center for Watershed Science, is allowing these floodwaters to enter into farmland. And that is very beneficial to salmon. I was wondering if maybe you could talk a little bit about that, Mike, since that's an area of your expertise.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the degree to which we've altered the landscape of the Central Valley and disconnected rivers from most of the land in the floodplain in the Central Valley means that, you know, through some of the methods that they're experimenting with and demonstrating with landowners, that there might be this great potential to harness some of the ecosystem productivity that's possible on flooded agricultural fields and direct that back to the river in a way that provides benefits for fish. One of the things that Michael was saying earlier that was so interesting was just, you know, the vast network of wetlands and inundated floodplains throughout the Sacramento Valley that we used to have. And the work that they're doing is an interesting approach to try to harness the entirety of that landscape for the benefit of rivers and fish.
If you're just joining us, our guests are two restoration scientists working for River Partners, a conservation organization dedicated to the rehabilitation of river watersheds in California. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Associate Director of Restoration Science Michael Rogner and Senior Restoration Science Ecologist Mike Davis. I'm Dave Schloem, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's return now to our conversation with two restoration scientists from the conservation organization River Partners, Michael Rogner and Mike Davis. The challenge there is, you know, all of this work does require funding, and I'm wondering, what are some of the challenges you face, you know, gaining access to the money you need to go do this work, and also, like, you know, hearing today about how the state budget's not doing too well with a big deficit. What are some of the challenges you face there?
Yeah, just conservation in general at state and federal level is chronically underfunded. And that, you know, not only creates the obvious problems of how do you get funding to do these projects, but it also creates all these sort of rippling problems, like the National Wildlife Refuge System is way understaffed. They're not allowed to fill these positions a lot of the times. And so how do you go to them and say, hey, I've got this great idea to do this, you know, 3,000 acre project that's going to take 10 years. And they don't even have the staff to, you know, be out mowing, you know, roads and doing, you know, locking gates. And so it's challenging from a personnel perspective, and it makes you get really creative in how you build these partnerships. And it's really led us to collaborating with a lot of communities that maybe, you know, we wouldn't have collaborated with if, you know, money was just, you know, flowing more freely.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's the old penny wise, pound foolish thing where, you know, spending money on these projects, you know, down the road in the future has just massive dividends compared to not doing them.
Yeah. And the amount of money that we spend right now on the flood control system is, you know, orders, just several orders of magnitude higher than any money that we spend on conservation projects. And the conservation projects allow us to not spend that money in the future. And so it's really short-sighted not to do these projects just from a fiscal standpoint.
Yeah. Well, let's shift to some of your big success stories. And I also, but before I ask that, let me ask that a little differently and Matt can edit it. Tell us about, you know, the scale of what you're doing and the scope around the state, because you've got projects going on all over the place, right?
Absolutely. So wherever there's a river, there's potential projects. River Partners tends to focus on places that really need the help. And what I mean is places where there maybe aren't a lot of groups doing the work. So will we ever work on the LA River? You know, maybe, I don't know, never say no, but there's a lot of people trying to help the LA River. And so, you know, let's go to the Alamo River or the New River in Imperial Valley, because there's not a lot of people there trying to fix those places. And they're some of the most degraded places in the state. They're some of the most impoverished communities in the state. And so when we see places like that, we're like, yeah, let's go there. Let's figure out a way to engage with those communities and figure out what they want and what they need and you know, help them achieve those things.
Yeah, that's one of the most exciting aspects that brought me to River Partners. You know, you have a collection of folks here, and with our partners, you have a community of people who don't turn away from some of the most degraded places in the Central Valley or the Imperial Valley. And that's been a real great satisfaction of mine working here.
Well, let's look at some of your big success stories. Let's start with Dos Rios Ranch Preserve. Tell us about where that is and a little bit of the background. Michael?
Dos Rios Ranch is at the confluence of the San Joaquin and Tuolumne Rivers in the San Joaquin Valley. And years ago, the Tuolumne River Trust started trying to, you know, put together, you know, a large scale conservation project. And they really laid the groundwork for what ended up becoming a 2,100 acre, you know, horticultural restoration at the confluence of those two rivers. It's the largest project of its kind in the West. And recently, the land has been turned over to the state of California to become California's newest state park in something like 15 years. So it's a really exciting story. And everything that we've talked about on the show is reflected in that project. I'll just bring up one quick example. You know, in these high water events that we've seen the last couple of years, the town of Grayson is under tremendous flood risk, and levees were punched and degraded to allow flood water to spread out over Dos Rios Ranch and across the National Wildlife Refuge on the other side of the river. And that basically, you know, kept the town of Grayson from, you know, everybody having a foot of water in their house. And so these are real examples of the projects being implemented at a scale that makes a real difference in people's lives.
Could you tell me specifically some of the things that you've done there at Dos Rios to achieve this?
Yeah, absolutely. We historically, it was farmed, you know, a lot of alfalfa and other crops. And we converted 2,100 acres of floodplain back to native riparian forest using about 40 different species of you know, everything from native grasses to, you know, to cottonwoods. And over 10 years, we maintained this habitat, you know, sort of in phases. And now there's no maintenance necessary, because once you reestablished all of that habitat that has been taken away, if the river is functioning enough as a river, it basically maintains that habitat. So if you go out there today, you know, it's very hard to find invasive species. It's hard to find, you know, a lot of these things that you see all over the valley. And instead, there's tremendous wildlife success stories. You know, there's people out there picnicking, they're building facilities right now to host the public. And so it's really exciting. And it's an example of just, you know, we need to do one of those projects in every county in California, essentially.
And I'm wondering too, have you incorporated the indigenous knowledge of the native people that have lived there, you know, for millennia, in helping to repopulate the plants, for example, with what used to be there?
Absolutely. So the head of the, I'm going to get the name wrong here, but the California Basket Weaver Association, this native woman is just amazing. She collects Santa Barbara sedge, which is a very important plant that is used in basket weaving. And we, you know, called the tribe and we're like, you know, what do you want us to plant, and where do you want us to plant it, and how do you want to harvest it, and helped make all those things happen. And now every time there's an event at Dos Rios, you know, the tribes are there along with state agencies and, you know, other NGOs. And it's been a really refreshing thing to see, you know, as someone who's always been on the sort of on the outside looking in, and just, you know, see tribal members with big smiles on their face and happy about the project is about the most satisfying, you know, thing I could see on that project.
And what about the wildlife there? What have you seen a big bounce back in the wildlife populations?
Yeah, and it's not just us. So we you know, we take partners in our name very seriously. And so we have a lot of research partnerships out there. And so people have been looking at riparian brush rabbit, which is an endangered rabbit species. People have been looking at bird response, and all of it is extremely encouraging, and, you know, also in line with sort of what we predicted, you know, what we thought might happen. The response has been tremendous. We hoped that it would be tremendous. We predicted that it would be, and it has been. And this is consistent with research that is being done all over the state on other restoration projects. You know, if you build it, the birds are going to find it, you know, and the other critters are going to find it. And we just need to, you know, provide them the space and get out of the way.
Yeah. And so for people, the public, seeing that this is going to be our newest state park in California, what are some of the things that they could, you know, plan on seeing and doing there?
Well, right now, state parks is you know, building picnic areas and that sort of thing. This is a area of the state that is, you know, park poor. There's not very many parks in the San Joaquin Valley. And so this is an opportunity to go out and walk in a riparian forest, to get your feet in the river, you know, the San Joaquin Valley in the summertime, but boy, it's hot. And so you can go out there and you can get in the Tuolumne River, you know, take a picnic, look at, watch some birds, go fishing, whatever, all, you know, all those things that, that, you know, people my age took for granted a long time ago, you know, now that space is being created, you know, in the San Joaquin Valley, and it's great.
One thing I'll say about Dos Rios Ranch in the San Joaquin is that it's, of course, a success in its own right and an amazing success. But what's most exciting to me is how it's already informing our work elsewhere in the valley. So it's, you know, a driving demonstration of what's possible for us as we look to other restoration plan projects that we're planning in the Sacramento Valley and in all these different areas, from understanding river dynamics to forging relationships with tribal partners. We're learning the lessons of Dos Rios and applying them elsewhere and hopefully doing them even better.
Well, let's head north to another project that's been very successful and innovative. Tell us about Willow Bend. Where is that and what's it all about?
Willow Bend is about 10 miles north of the city of Colusa. It's a 175-acre property, which we purchased in 2009. And we spent a long time planning and permitting that project because there were some, you know, interesting things that we wanted to experiment with providing floodplain habitat for fish that maybe took the regulatory agencies a little while to kind of wrap their brains around. But we came to an understanding and we were able to restore the project. And right now it's under about 10 feet of water. So, you know, it's in a happy place right now and excited to see how it continues going forward.
And how does that benefit the fish?
Yeah. So one thing that we've learned over the last decade, thanks to the research of Carson Jeffries at UC Davis that you mentioned earlier and others, is that, you know, water on the floodplain is not all the same. You actually need water to slow down on the floodplain and spend a significant amount of time on the floodplain, which allows aquatic food webs to really kick off and create the kind of abundant food that fish rely on. And so our project at Willow Bend is experiment with how to increase the residence time of water on floodplains. And we think we've found a pretty good model for how to do that. And now the potential, you know, is that we can do this elsewhere.
And I would think too that there's a tremendous benefit for the farmers there, for people that own farmland, because, you know, all of that going on is just, it's adding nutrients to the soil. It's improving soil health. And in the long run, that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. The land that is farmed on the wet side of the levee is, you know, it's a tough place to farm because it floods, but it's also the most fertile soils on the planet. And so that's why we have farmed right up to the edge of the rivers. But we need to find some places where maybe we can convert some of that into habitat.
And I understand you have a very unique fish gate there. Tell us about that.
So let me back up a second. The Sacramento River along this reach is perched, meaning that the riverbank is a little bit higher than, you know, the lands immediately adjacent to it. So when it floods, that water historically would have gone off into the Butte Basin, but now we've created levees. And so basically Willow Bend becomes a big lake and it disconnects from the river, and the property is still 10 feet deep in water. And so that water is full of juvenile salmon who get washed in with the flood. And as long as they're out there, they grow very quickly because there's a ton of food. But the problem is they had no way to get back into the river. And so we had a couple of options. One, we could just punch a hole in the levee, but that would make the flooding on the property go away so quick that the fish would not get any benefit, you know, from being out on the floodplain. So we wanted to hold that water back for as long as we could to allow the fish to grow big and then release them back into the river, you know, sort of as they saw fit, you know, weeks or even months later. And so we worked with engineers at Cal Poly to develop a gate which operates without power. It fits all of NOAA's fish passage criteria. And basically what it does is once the property floods, it just slowly meters the water back out into the river, and the fish can leave at any time. But what we found is they stay on the property as long as they can. They eat as much food as they can. And then, you know, before the water finishes draining out, then they leave and go back into the river system.
That's amazing. And Mike, what have you observed there that gives you hope for the future?
You know, the unique thing about that project to me is just the creativity that was exercised and then implemented. That's what gives me hope about that project. You know, when we try to do this in other locations, is that we encountered a problem and no one just threw their hands up. We developed, you know, a totally novel system that, you know, to our knowledge is unique in the world to try to find solutions for fish and wildlife.
Well, Michael and Mike, it's just been a joy to talk to you so much about your work with River Partners. Thanks for joining us, Michael Rogner and Mike Davis. Just fascinating and uplifting to hear about this great work you guys are doing.
Thanks, Dave. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks again to our guests from River Partners, President Julie Rentner, along with Associate Director of Restoration Science Michael Rogner and Senior Restoration Science Ecologist Mike Davis. You can learn more about the work of River Partners at their website, riverpartners.org. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of CAP Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, is by Matt Schiltz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.